It's the True Faith Podcast, post Newcastle United 2, Liverpool 3 on a Saturday night at St James's Park. I'm Alex Hurst, Norman Riley with me to talk through all of the action and the context of the game, and a few things to get us started. First of all, brand new issue of True Faith out now. Fans, you can get it anywhere in the world digitally, or I will literally post it to your door. Buy it from the back page, M&M News in Central in Town. Newcastle United's only print fanzine, so please do get involved. We are sponsored by our patrons who pay about £7 a month. £1, that would be too generous. They pay about £7 a month for 20 extra podcasts, and we've got some of the audio coming up later in the show from Norman's magnificent matchday podcast last night, basically showcasing the ridiculous atmosphere at St James's Park. And Norman, where to start with that one? I mean, I've got loads of questions for you, and I think we're going to talk through the game. Mm-hmm. But you know what? How proud are you of this team? And you know, the talk before the game was all about, let's keep it tight, 60, 70 minutes, let's try and stay in the game. And it just didn't happen, did it? We were magnificent.
It was interesting because I thought, obviously, the amount riding on the game for Liverpool, it was huge. They had to win. No, they had to win, and they did, you know, which is testament how good they are. But I thought we'd either go one of two ways. We'd either concede early and it could be a comfortable 2-3-0 win, or we'd keep it tight like that, you know, as we do. That's what Newcastle do, and we might get something. But because the pressure was off, the players played like they played like they had nothing to lose. And to us, well, obviously they didn't. That the game to lose, but there was nothing riding on it for us. And that just, it filled that up from the players into the stands within a matter of seconds from kickoff. It was like all of a sudden, hold on a second, we're having a gun. We're here to play and we're here to beat them today. And this is, it was just a beautiful, beautiful game to watch. I can't believe I'm so positive about a defeat. It was just a fantastic performance. And I suppose a kind of window into what Newcastle United, with Rafa Benitez backed financially, would be capable of. Because you give him the players that are capable of performing like that on a weekly basis, a team that can take risks because they're good enough to take those risks. That's what you'd get. You'd get entertaining football. Rafa's a pragmatic manager. He'll work with the tools that he's got. That's why we've been playing this kind of dour sort of stifling football for a couple of seasons, because that's the choice. That's the only choice that we've had. Give him the money, and that's what you'll get. You'll get entertainment, just like you did when he was manager of Liverpool.
Absolutely, and it was such a weird night, first of all, because a 1945 kickoff. I think we were saying halfway through the day we wish every home game was 1945 on a Saturday night. Not anymore. Not feeling like I'm feeling on this Sunday morning. And I reckon there's a few sore heads out there, not just the Liverpool fans who got punched in the head for being in the home end. More on that later. But from me and you, had a good old drink. We're in our office now in the Toffee Factory, Newcastle. Went to the free trade, went to the town. It was a tremendous day in the city of Newcastle for everybody, not just going to the game. But it was almost like beforehand, you know, speaking to other lads who do the podcast, and it was like, okay, well, it doesn't matter about tonight, because even if we get beat 4-0, it's all about Rafa, it's all about singing, it's all about showing him love. And I think that was the plan, and then this game of football happens. And it's like, we should have expected that, because it's Rafa. And, you know, Liverpool, regarding, you know, let's assume Rafa leaves, which is not something I want to assume, but let's assume it does happen. Liverpool are the only top six side that Rafa hasn't beaten at home in his tenure here. Mm-hmm. We'll put all of the other sides to the sword. I mean, that in itself is a sensational record over two seasons. Would be interesting to see if in the last two seasons anyone else has done that. I highly doubt it. I probably should have checked, but we haven't. And it was like, we should have known that Rafa would have a plan to make this a right good fucking game. And I get what you're saying about, you know, the team, and I think the second half performance was so much better than the first half performance, because we started, I think, I don't think it was the occasion, but, you know, look at Liverpool's first goal. Atsu gives the ball away to Richie. You know, there's a moment before that Shaw makes a brilliant tackle, yeah, on Mane, then passes the ball to the other box, and that's not really like us. Lascelles, and you know, does the same thing, gives the ball away, passes the ball to them. And I think in the first half, until we got our goal, there were a bit of nerves. And I mean, we may as well kind of talk through the game. You know, team selection was kind of what everyone thought. Kay Sung Young comes in for John Joe Shelby, which again isn't that surprising. People are kind of equating that to John Joe's career being over at Newcastle. Time will tell. But ultimately, you know, the game starts off kind of 100 miles an hour. Liverpool are dangerous on the counter, more dangerous than us, which you'd expect. But I thought Newcastle started very well and were the equal of Liverpool before the first goal. How did you see it?
The whole, I absolutely saw it. I think the whole, the whole match, we were the equals. There was, you know, there was never a period in the match where I thought they were utterly dominant. I mean, the second half especially, after the Rondon equaliser, we were so on top of the game for about sort of 10, 15 minutes. At that point, I thought, we've got them. They're nervous. They're falling apart. We're going to get a winning goal. I think I even turned around you and said at one point, I can see us winning this 4-2 if we keep going the way we are. I mean, that was wildly optimistic and probably fueled by drink and atmosphere. But no, we started off, I thought, I wouldn't necessarily say on the front foot, but we certainly didn't start off cagey. Yes, there were, you know, there was a little bit of shoddiness in there, but I would put that more down to the fact that you say nerves. Nerves, possibly, but again, this was a match for us that, on a kind of psychological level, for the players, it didn't matter. And now that sounds, I don't mean it doesn't matter that the professionals, the care, the one to win the match, but what I mean is, you know, you've got two sides in completely different positions. Liverpool, everything to play for. Us, nothing to play for. So I think the concentration levels at the start of the match probably weren't kind of on a level because our concentration levels, I suppose, didn't need to be. But as soon as the players got the bit between their teeth, that was it. We transformed after the sort of first 10 minutes into a side, to be honest with you, that looked like it had a lot riding on the game. And that was just really good to see.
Spot on there with that analysis. And in terms of defensive application, in terms of putting your head in, winning 50-50s, turning the ball over, Isaac Hayden, Fabian Schär just continued to win the ball in the second half. It genuinely did look like, for a while, like, you know, quality aside, you know, we were battling to stay in the Premier League or battling for something, and they were the team kind of just knocking it about. You know, we'll get on to the second half in a minute and kind of the psychological impact I think that Salomon Rondon in particular has on that Liverpool team. You know, I hate, you know, saying one player was much better than the others, but we're going to talk about his performance. But I thought Salomon Rondon put the fear of God into Liverpool. Like, yeah, I mean, Van Dijk, one of the best players in the world, potentially. We'll know this morning that he's been in the game of football last night. We concede the first goal, and it's disappointing. I don't think we can lie. First of all, like we said, we give the ball away in our own corner. Matt Ritchie does great. Matt Ritchie was fucking brilliant, but Matt Ritchie does great to block a Salah shot. And then, you know, what happens from there is really disappointing. We may as well get into it. The captain, who I thought had a really good game, apart from all the goals we conceded.
So that's funny because he had a great game apart from the fact that he was responsible for three goals that the opposition scored. Sounds kind of like Titus Bramble's performance at Newcastle. But not that I'm comparing, obviously, Jamal Lascelles and Titus Bramble. The first goal, now, at the time, it just happened so quickly. I don't think we were just like, that was shocking, Mark. And that's what it initially appeared like. Now, obviously, I haven't watched the highlights. You do see that Lascelles slips, and of course my biased thought process is like, oh, Lascelles slipped, it was dead unfortunate. But you made the very good point, and again, having watched it, he just loses his man. It was very, he switched off for a split microsecond. And as soon as he's realised that Van Dijk's got that 2 or 3 inches on him, he's tried to kind of get back on him, and he's slipping. It's just given Van Dijk the freedom of the box to put in what was a fantastic header, to be honest. But I think what was slightly disappointing as well is that the gap just appeared. This huge, it was almost like Van Dijk was just kind of on his own in a kind of circle of about like a metre. It was just like, wait, what's happened here? What's happened? And I think, I know, did we have any players on the covering the posts? That's, you see, a little thing like that. It kind of, Van Dijk comes up for a header and he's got the goal gaping. You have a player on the posts, which is perhaps something that the players themselves should be seeing. Get on the post, get on the post. It narrows Van Dijk's kind of window down, and it might produce a different result. But yeah, disappointing.
Ultimately, with these type of things, we're going to talk about this later in reference to the Fabinho free kick dive and a few other things in the game. It's a fantastic delivery. You know, it doesn't matter, you can lose your man if he hits the first man over it. It's a fantastic delivery from Arnold, and again, more on Arnold in a fucking bit. Interesting night he had. But it's a fantastic delivery and it's a great header. And yeah, it's frustrating that Lascelles loses man, but that's the difference. Like, we do that against Southampton. In fact, we do it three times in the second half. And Yoshida misses all three chances. So it's not like it hasn't been coming. And I think Match of the Day referenced how bad we are in set pieces. it's especially frustrating that we've started so well. But you know what, in the context of this game, we're 1-0 down. This is supposed to be, right, Liverpool are 1-0 up, lads. This is Liverpool coming to bottom half Newcastle United. This is Liverpool who've lost one game in the league this season. They should boss it from here. They should put it to bed. They should win the game 3-4-0. And the opposite happens. And that's testament to our lads. And, you know, again, I'll point them out. And I've criticised him at times this season on this podcast. Matt Ritchie. I always look at Matt Ritchie when we go behind. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at Matt Ritchie when we go behind, he is... He's in everyone's faces. He's G'ing everyone up. He's saying, this isn't over. This isn't done. And if you compare, like, you know, we always talk about the character of this side and what Rafa Benitez has done. You compare a player like Matt Ritchie to a player like Johan Cabaye or a player like Moussa Sissoko. You know, we were beaten 6-0 by Liverpool years ago. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. When we conceded that first goal, you have Matt Ritchie in your fucking face as a player. And you're like, I'm not going to let him down. He still believes. And whilst that may be a little bit simplistic, because, you know, we've got, like, Kay Sun Young's a professional footballer, played at the highest level for a long time, I think Matt Ritchie's enthusiasm drove that team yesterday. And when the crowd is on it, like we were, because, you know, last home game of the season, great game of football, potentially Rafa's last game, 1945 kickoff, you can tell it feeds the players. You can tell a player like Christian Atsu, he grows a couple of inches, he gets a yard quicker. Matt Ritchie starts, you know, controlling the ball first time, he starts popping it off. And after that first goal went in, I think there was only one team in the game for a period. Would you agree? And how do you think that, you know, we got back into the game like we did?
You're right, we did control the game after they scored. One thing I will say, and this isn't me criticising Liverpool Football Club. I think Liverpool are a fantastic team, great supporters in general, you know, wonderful city, etc., etc. But when they scored that goal yesterday, if I was a Newcastle player, seeing how they celebrated that goal, I think that immediately would have just wound me up. And if you watch it back, I think we said at the time that there's a bit of an arrogance. Yeah, they've already got this game, they've already won the game. And the celebrations, you're watching my match of the day, and they were just really kind of... It was a cockiness there, which, you know, which is going to come with a team that's as good as they are. But it was this overconfidence. And obviously, you look at someone like Matt Ritchie, maybe he sees something like that. I might be completely speculating. I mean, this is just me interpreting how I did. He looks at that and he thinks, yeah, we need to show these that we're not going to lie down. And that's exactly what happened. And we equalised relatively quickly. And yeah, they we'll talk about it, obviously, and then they got the goal. But we never, ever looked like, well, that game, even when they got the what turned out to be the winner, I still at that point felt that we would get something. And that's testament to players like you say, players like Matt Ritchie. I'm going to mention him because I've defended him on numerous occasions. But I thought Manquillo was excellent yesterday. And like Atsu, he's one of those players, whatever his limitations are, when the crowd's up for it, when the rest of the players are up for it, when there's this kind of confidence and this belief and desire running through them, they all look so much better. And you mentioned Cabaye there, and Sissoko, let's see. Now, look, does Matt Ritchie have a bigger will to win than Johan Cabaye? Well, probably. And ultimately, he has to, because Johan Cabaye was technically a lot better of a footballer. I mean, you look at his career. Yep. He's had a totally different career. But at the same time, these are players being managed by Rafa Benitez. You know, you put like Johan Cabaye, Moussa Sissoko, and Rafa Benitez side, and they might actually produce that kind of performance as well. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it's lovely to see that type of player in the team, because there's a direct connect with the fans, because he's almost doing what you think that you would do if you'd ever been given the chance. You would just give it everything, and it was really lovely to see.
I mean, we'll talk about the goal. The goal, and I'm going to play some audio after this of Norman's Matchday podcast, which is available for patrons, where he basically talks before the game with a bunch of us and then records during the game, almost like a kind of roving BBC reporter, but from Block V or from the away end with the atmosphere. And the atmosphere after both goals yesterday, and the atmosphere...
Kind of like John Simpson when he walked into Kabul after the fall of the Taliban. Kind of that kind of journalism, isn't it?
Exactly that kind of journalism. But... I mean, first of all, Norman, major question to ask here. Has a team ever benefited as much by conceding a goal as Liverpool did there? Because it's a red card and it's a penalty. And I don't think Matt Ritchie doesn't miss many. And I think he scores the penalty. And I think we're 1-1 against 10 men. And you talk about big moments in the title race. And listen, 38-game season, the best team wins. You've got two, you know, ridiculous teams in terms of level compared to the rest of the Premier League. I wonder whether Jurgen Klopp and the players and the Liverpool fans realise just how much they got away with it there.
Absolutely. Watching Matt today this morning, and you watch the incident and you just think, do I blame Christian Atsu for doing what he did? Of course I don't. The ball is there, the goal's gaping, and Atsu just lashes it in, which is exactly what you would do. But I reckon Atsu probably on with Heinze probably thought, if I just let the ball run, that would have been it. And you're right, I think Matt Ritchie did score that penalty. And I think against 10 men, Liverpool will have to reshuffle. They probably take off an attacker. So they take off Sturridge. They're a completely different side. Now, how many times has Liverpool been down to 10 men this season? I genuinely don't recall seeing it, so I don't even know how they react to it. Now, you're bringing everything there. They go down to 10 men. The nerves start kicking in. It's ones each. The crowd is going even more raucous than it was because they've had a red card. And we know that this is a real chance of winning. And it didn't happen. And it's a real shame. But at the same time, did that stop us celebrating Christian Atsu's goal like absolute lunatics? Well, no, it didn't. But you're right. I mean, they've benefited hugely from it. To a certain extent, part of me thinks that the rule's a little bit stupid. Regardless, Arnold should have been sent off. He handled the ball on the line. And yes, we did score, but we did lose out the advantage of having a man sent off the pitch. So there you go. If there's anyone from the FA watching this, have a word here.
Yeah, and it was, first of all, Richie, they called it a mishit shot on Match of the Day. I'm not sure. I mean, Rondon, great first time finish, great goal, should have been. Yeah. And then Atsu smashes it in, and it's kind of the place just comes alive again. And it was almost like, because, you know, I don't know how many minutes it was. This isn't the type of podcast, by the way, for your exact minutes after goals. It was some minutes after Liverpool scored their third goal. There were some minutes that elapsed. Who knows how many it was? It's lost to history now. But even after Liverpool scored that first goal, I think Dubravka makes a really good save, but it might have been at 1-1 anyway. And it was the whole game. And you know what? I'm going to echo the Man City game here. When we beat Man City at home, and let's face it, I thought we were better last night than we were against Man City. But that doesn't always mean you have to win the game. You know, you could argue that Man City didn't deserve to lose to us. I thought we should have won the game last night. But what I find so interesting about last night is the fact that, like, it's not like Dubravka's pulled off 5 or 6 saves to keep them out. Liverpool didn't have a shot in the second half. Sturridge skies went over on 52 minutes. Yeah. And that's it. That's it for what the next 30 minutes from Liverpool, who are this, you know, and they are. We're not bad losers here. I want to give credit where it's due. Liverpool are a great team. And some of the football they played, some of the first time passing through midfield was exceptional. We defended it brilliantly. But they weren't all that to us. And it was kind of like, I think we all expected more. And it just, you know, Dubravka's not pulling off saves. There's no, the referee and controversy was in their favour, not ours. And it was the same as the Man City game where when you know, people look back at this result in 30 years, think, oh, we beat Man City at home 2-1. I've said it before on the podcast. It must have been off the line. It must have been backs to the ball. It must have been keeper making saves. The referees probably gave what dodgy. Nah, we just beat them. Yeah. We just controlled the game without possession, but we'll control the space as a Rafa team will do. We limited them to very few chances, and it was the same again yesterday. And it's almost like it's a tactical masterclass. Norman to do that from 2-1 down to go behind twice as well. I don't know how Rafa does it. Obviously, we're not football managers. We aren't, you know, at that level. I don't know how he does it, but he does. And I just want to talk through the Perez chance, by the way. And again, for Liverpool. I mean, this, by the way, is a little period of football, pure football. Shaw wins the ball, passes it to Liverpool. Hayden wins it back, or Hayden wins the ball, vice versa. First of all, Shaw's 3 steps forward, outside of the foot pass, is too much. So we're already off to a flyer. Christian Atsu then out jumps Dejan Lovren to win ahead. That's pathetic. Pathetic from Lovren. If you watch
fans
it again,
I've read a couple of their reports this morning written by Liverpool fans, and they've slated Lovren's performance.
He was bad. But I mean, Christian Atsu wins a header against him. Christian Atsu is like 5'9" or something. Dejan Lovren, this big, you know, Balkan centre back, yeah. And it's just like Christian Atsu, not only has he won the header, he's knocked it down for Jose Perez. Now, from Shaw, the ball doesn't actually touch the ground from here. Shaw plays it from the outside of the right foot. Atsu's knocked down. Perez doesn't let it bounce. Van Dijk should get there and clear him out, either win the ball or shepherd him away from goal. He takes another touch, gets away from Van Dijk and smashes against the crossbar. And if that had gone in, which it should have, I think we'll win that game again. And it's all ifs and buts, and who knows how Liverpool respond, who knows how we respond, you know, because do we step off all these kind of things by going ahead? And it's just, I mean, it's almost like fantasy football watching that. And it hasn't fucking gone in, so no one will remember it. It's like Jonjo Shelvey against Chef Wed when he hits the bar from his own half. No one really talks about it or remembers it because those fine margins make a career. I mean, it was just unbelievable football. I mean, we are going to talk about Atsu a little bit later, but I know you want to kind of touch on his performance because, you know, we had it at Brighton last week. It was in the away end. It was Atsu shite, he shite, Mankio shite, these shite. Well, actually, these lads, they're all right.
Couldn't agree more, mate. It's frustrating, and, you know, I'm repeating myself here. I'm pretty much repeating what I said last week in the Brighton review, that these players have got limitations. These players weren't getting games at the clubs at. The cost next to nought. They're coming in the side, they're being asked to do a job, and as far as I can see, they're doing the job that they're being given, and they're not going to tear up trees because that's not the kind of players that they are. Christian Atsu was in the Premier League for 3 or 4 years and barely got a game. He went out and loaned Everton, he went out and loaned Bournemouth, he didn't play. Rafa's turned him into a... Rafa's ability, his coaching ability, the coaching staff's ability, and Christian Atsu's sheer desire have turned him into a Premier League footballer. Now, would he be in any other Premier League team playing the way that he is? Probably not. This is down to coaching. It's down to man-managing. It's down to micro-management. But the fact is, every time he steps on that pitch, every time Mankio steps on that pitch, every time they do something that isn't perfect, you know, that shouldn't take away from the fact that, like, most of the time, they're doing the jobs that they're out there doing. They're doing it fantastically well. And it's just for me, it's just really good to see when they do put in a performance like that, which was basically flawless last night. That's pretty much flawless. Yes, he gave the ball away for the first goal, but look where he gave the ball away. I mean, it wasn't, you know, that really shouldn't be leading to a goal anyways. And if you want to lose the ball, you want to lose the ball on the edge of the 18-yard box, you know. Mankio, again, he's come in, he's replaced Yedlin in the side. And this is no criticism of DeAndre Yedlin, but we've looked better with Mankio in that position. And it's... I'm criticising players when they're not pulling their weight, when they clearly don't care. You know, you mentioned Sissoko before, there were games where he just disappeared. His heart wasn't in it. These players are the one thing that they always give, that they always put their heart into it. And for me, criticising them is never going to help them. And look what happened last night. They were brilliant. Fair play to them, simple as that.
There's a moment in the second half, I think it's just before our equaliser, when Christian Atsu picks the ball up on the halfway line, and the Christian Atsu of maybe a lot of this season or of old would have gone backwards. And I think he looks in front of him and he sees Dejan Lovren. Lovren doesn't even get close enough to him to even attempt the foul. And he puts a fantastic ball in. I think Robertson heads it out for a corner when Perez is coming in and will score. And that only happens because Atsu does what he does. And that, like, no bones, I want to see better players playing for Newcastle than Christian Atsu. But you can't fault his endeavour. You can't fault what he gives. And he cost £5 million. He couldn't get in our team in the Championship ahead of Johan Gufran. And he's come in last night with Almiron injured, and we'll touch a bit that more on that later, how much we missed him. But he's come in last night, and he's really given Liverpool something to think about, and he scored a goal. And, you know, that run in the second half where Milner brings him down, he beats about five Liverpool players. Like, what are Liverpool playing out there? Like, it's Christian Atsu, lads, that's what I'm thinking. And then you've got to just say, you know, Atsu, he's come in, and I don't think Rafa could have asked any more from
him. Tell you what I will say, and this ties in Atsu as well, it's self-belief, isn't it? It's coaching staff giving you the confidence to do that. It's the spirit that's obviously been engendered within the squad itself. These are players who trust each other, players who clearly believe in each other, players who probably know their own limitations and the limitations of teammates, but it doesn't matter because the work is a unit. Now, Ayuze Perez is the example I'll use to... He is the absolute manifestation of that. This is a player who we saw the potential. We saw the potential when he came over as a 21-year-old and he came into when Alan Pardew said, you know, he's fast-tracked in the first team. He was brilliant. And he kind of disappeared in the last two seasons, but especially the last 12 months, especially, it's almost like he's gained extra ability. And it's not, that's just down to self-belief and self-confidence. That run last night where he hit the ball, the close control, the ball at the minute is sticking to Ayoze Perez's feet, and his footwork is so quick, he's basically, I love this word, I'm going to use it, bamboozling defenders. It's just self-belief. It's self-belief and brilliant coaching, and it's just so lovely. Ayoze Perez, I'm telling you, he goes to Spain, he goes to Betis, he goes to Valencia, he goes to Atletico Madrid, and assume Simeone, he'll be an absolute star in that league, I don't doubt it.
Well, I hope he stays here under the tutelage of Rafa Benitez and continues to get better. Liverpool's second goal, again, it's dreadful from Newcastle, and this is the thing, this is why I can't get my head around this game. It's like, we were so good for us, considering that position, but you can't give away three goals. And I know the third one will come. You can't give away three goals to anyone and expect to win games at home. And, like, what happens, Norman, for the second goal of it? I mean, you've watched it back. Like, where's Lascelles? Like, where is he? I don't even think he's in the shot.
I've no idea. I suppose the only justification you can maybe make is that when they attack, they're so quick. I mean, the speed that they ping the ball around, like you say, the kind of first-time passing. Now, don't get me wrong, just because they're passing the ball quickly doesn't mean you shouldn't be tracking back or picking up your man or sticking with them. But, I don't know, they got that second goal not long after we equalised as well. The stadium was raucous. I can only guess that the concentration levels, the players were probably still a bit giddy, maybe getting a little bit carried away with themselves slightly, so the concentration slips ever so slightly. And against a team like Liverpool, like they were against Man City, you cannot afford one microsecond of a concentration lapse because you're punished for it. And ultimately, we conceded three goals basically from lapses in concentration. Well, the third one's, yeah, that's a discussion we're going to have, but that's all I can say about it. Yeah, LSLs weren't missing, but excitement, lack of concentration, speed of Liverpool's attack. There you go. That's as good as it gets for me there, mate. Inexcusable. Inexcusable.
Yeah, and you know, I think if you're going to be hypercritical, which we know the manager will be, I think Richie and whoever else is with which in the corner are far too square. Mm-hmm. One of them should have dropped. Sturridge's back heel, which is very good from Sturridge, doesn't happen. You know, Arnold, who shouldn't be on the fucking pitch, puts the ball in. And yet it's so disappointing to see Mo Salah on 7 yards out in the Castle Penney. And you could see Dubravka's just like, Dubravka's normally pretty mild-mannered, but he's just like, fuck's sake, lads. Like, yeah. Me, like, I've got the family here. Like, I've got the family here last game of the season. The world is watching and you're giving us Mo Salah 7 yards out. What the fuck am I supposed to do? I've had Virgil Van Dijk 4 yards out. Pretty much. Like, go in, 2-1 down at half-time. Just really quickly, I need to dig out one of the lads. I'll remain nameless. Patrons will know because Mickey, Rob, Adam and Paul put together a tremendous first listen for Patrons last night. First listen is the show that was recorded like on the final whistle. So it's full of like emotion, passion, a little bit of bullshit sometimes, and you know, statistical analysis from Adam. And one of the lads said, Mo Salah turns up and didn't fancy it. And I had to remind him he actually scored. And the first half was like, he was shite. He scored.
Do you think the jug of cocktail might have anything?
I think a jug of cocktail might have. I think it was more than one jug, actually. In fact, I can remember a place that will remain nameless because we don't want to sully their name. You marching up to the bar and like grabbing it from behind the bar because it had been sent away.
I was thirsty.
Yeah, thirsty work. Right, half-time, Norman, 2-1. I think everyone, the lads applauded everyone off the pitch. Pretty positive, but I think everyone, even from there, kind of thought, you know what, the game's Liverpool for winning, and it just didn't happen again, did it? Second half, Newcastle United, what can you say?
I would love to have an insight into what Rafa said at half-time to those players and what Klopp said. It's what Klopp said that I think I'd be more keen to hear, because they came out, I genuinely thought they're going to come out and Klopp would tell them, look, just push for 10 minutes, sorry, because you'll get the third goal to come. When the third goal guns in, when it's a two-goal deficit, that's it, the game's over, it's done, just push. And they didn't. We came out and I just thought from the off, the players, again, I mean, it's difficult to kind of articulate exactly the feelings that I had right at that moment in time, but I genuinely thought the players just came out thinking we can get something, yeah, we can do something, yeah, and obviously it happened. I mean, we scored, what was it, the 58th minute we got the equaliser? Again, this is the minutes thing, isn't it? What was the exact minute we got the equaliser?
It was one of them. One of them.
It was a minute in the
but
match,
two things happened before that goal, which are interesting to me. One, Sturridge skies that chance when he can take a touch and put it where he wants. And that, again, unfortunately, is Lascelles pissing him out on the edge of the box, giving the ball away when there's no need. He had a good game though, apart from that. He genuinely did, it has to be said. He you know, like we didn't give them a chance.
Game, mate,
yeah, exactly, I know. But I don't want to dig him out too much because he's been good for Newcastle. So Sturridge misses that chance and you're like, that you're just like, what, you know, that was weird almost, like for him to be so bad, but it happens, it's football. And then from then on in,
They were nervous, mate. That's what Sturridge missing that chance. It's nerves. And this is Sturridge who barely played this season as well. Yet all of a sudden he finds himself in the side. I think Klopp made a mistake storming Sturridge. I think Origi would have given him more bother. I know Liverpool got three goals and Sturridge was on the pitch. But in terms of, I think they would have... Sturridge limited the movement of that forward line because basically Sturridge is a brilliant player, but he's knackered. You know, he's not the most mobile of players anymore. He's intelligent, but he's not the most mobile. Origi is... I really rate Origi. He's the kind of player I'd love to see at Newcastle, to be honest. Because Rafa turned him into a world beater. But I nerves. I think their players were nervous. We sensed it as a crowd. And on the pitch, can you imagine on the pitch? If we can sense it in the stand, on that pitch, those Newcastle players, could they be just picked up on the body language of the local players? And like you say, it was all us all of a sudden.
We started winning everything in midfield. Ke Sun Yong, Isaac Hayden, fantastic in the second half. I was a little bit critical to Norman at halftime about Hayden's first half performance. I thought he was a bit lax with his tackles. He was just throwing in tackles and risking bookings, and he was winning the ball, but the ball was creating Liverpool attacks. And I just thought, yeah, and I'm sure Rafa said the same thing, just be a little bit smarter. You know, take the man as well as the ball sometimes, and if you give away a foul, it's better than setting up a Liverpool counter-attack. And he does that. And Ke Sun Yong, so calm. And Liverpool's, I think it was Wijnaldum who was shite as typical away from home. We know what Wijnaldum is. He can, you know, he'll probably not win anything this season, but he was a coward when he played for Newcastle away from home. Even though he's a fantastic footballer. Henderson and Wijnaldum were almost not really in the game. They weren't really picking up possession. They weren't finding players. Most of Liverpool's play, really weirdly, and
it was from
the back of the front. Yeah. It was the fullbacks, who are very talented, playing balls, long balls, over the top. Mm-hmm. You know, Jurgen Klopp, Newcastle, all long balls to Rondon. Well done, Jurgen. You're spot on. Tactical analysis, 10 million quid a year, whatever.
I'll pick on somebody set off the match as well.
We'll mourn him later. But Liverpool are the same. And it was, you know, Robertson and Arnold to Mane and Salah, kind of in between the two of our three centre-backs. But Key and Hayden were winning that midfield battle. I mean, Key, free, Hayden, 2 million quid, 23 years old. And from that moment on, you kind of, like you say, you saw Liverpool start to capitulate a little bit, and none more so than Jordan Henderson. So just before we get our second goal, first of all, in the first half, Henderson does some weird, you know, he gives away a free kick in the box, and rather than just giving the ball back to our lads and cracking on with the game, I think he tries his best mate Jordan Pickford impression. He starts doing kicky ups. He won't give the ball back. He knows what he's doing. He's in front of the Gallagher end. He's trying to wind the fans up. And I thought, that's a strange one, considering your best mate, whose head literally fell off and literally cost Everton a fucking game of football because he was dicking about and got the crowd riled. So that's an interesting one. And there was a couple of other things in the game where he kicked the ball away. And you know what? Maybe Jordan Henderson, that's just how he plays. I don't know. But that moment before our equaliser, when Atsu puts the ball across, Richie runs into some Liverpool player, and it's accidental, and Liverpool don't get a foul, and most players will just get on with it. Henderson knows what he's doing. He's arms out, he's screaming in Mariner's face. Better referees would have booked him straight away. But he goes, and that sets the Gallagher off, and it sets the East Stand off, and the Leeds sad marking bastard. And it's like, he's played football for a long time. He must know he's winding him up. And I felt like he was doing it on purpose. And it's almost like, what are you doing? You've got a Premier League title to win, Jordan, and you're fucking on. And I know Sunderland have just finished fifth in the third division, which is their worst ever finish in their league history. And I know that must be hard to take. And I know that, you know, that they might get promoted. Who knows? I don't know much about the third division and the standard of it. And maybe in a couple of seasons they're going to reopen the whole stadium to let, you know, fans in if they do decide to come back and support the team. But don't take that into a title game against Newcastle United on a Saturday night. And he paid for it. In the biggest possible way, because if you watch the highlights and you listen to it, when we score that second goal, the whole stadium is singing, you're just a sad Mark and bastard. And it's like, maybe, you know what, it's football, who knows how much of these things have an influence, but it's probably easier to defend the corner in silence than with the whole fucking stadium, 52,000 people, when you're trying to talk to your mates about who to mark and you can't hear because of it.
I actually think that's just a bit pathetic. If you're like, look, the rivalry between Sunderland and Newcastle, another quick one. Is there anyone in Sunderland whose name isn't Jordan?
Not born between like 91 and 94, clearly.
It's like, mate, you're the captain of a team that's pushing for the title. You know what? You know, you're like petty, pathetic, immature issues that you have with a football team that you've really got nothing to do with anymore other than as an opponent. Like, just put them to bed. Learn to lead your players by acting like a mature human being instead of being a fucking child, which is what he was, and it almost backfired. And look, they won in the end, but they won, and I don't think Henderson was any kind of contribution towards that victory. He wasn't really there, apart from being a pathetic little boy. So there you go.
We'll score the corner, and it's absolutely, you know, it's an outrageous goal. Two things are outrageous about it: the assist and the finish. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I want to talk about the finish because it's the moment it left his boot. Under a second in the net, you just knew the connect. You could basically, where we were, and there's a lot of noise where we were, so you could almost feel it hit his foot. It was absolutely beautiful. And I know, obviously, you know, you've made some good points on Rondon, how we, you know, we maybe are kind of slightly overboard about how good he is, because that's the club that we are now. You know, a player who never really tore up trees in the Premier League is all of a sudden an absolute legend. Well, I'm going to have to say it to you, mate. You're completely wrong. He's fucking brilliant, and he's one of the best forwards in the Premier League, and that just showed it. So there you go.
I'll just come back quickly. I love Rondon, and I want him to sign. It's imperative we sign him. But I just feel like, you know, some fans have said, you know, Rondon, he's this, he's that. He's a 10-goal a season. He's got 10 now, hasn't he? So it's the first season we've had two players with 10 Premier League goals since Demba-born Papi Cissé, which is a grim stat, in the Premier League, of course. And I think he's great, and I'm desperate for it to sign him. I just want to aim a little bit higher. You know what? If Salomon Rondon was our second or third choice striker, we'd be a top six side. And that's what I want. No, and then, you know what? If that would inspire him to break into the team, even better. But at the minute, Newcastle United signing Salomon Rondon, even if we do it next season, it's still not good enough because we've got fucking Hosslou behind him. And in reality, if Rondon had got injured this season, there's an argument to say we could have got relegated. And we probably wouldn't because the three teams that have gone down are so bad, but we could have. It's only 9 points difference between us and Cardiff or something like that. So, yeah, you are right though, to get that dig in because he was fucking brilliant yesterday.
Oh, he bossed Van Dijk, mate. I mean, he bossed him, and like you say, Van Dijk is going to know that he's in a game. He dominated.
The interesting thing is, it was kind of even in the first half, and I thought the first 10 or 15, Van Dijk probably had the better of Rondon. And then Rondon learns from it, and he realises he can't go side by side. He can't kind of nudge him off the ball. He's going to have to get like in the danger zone in front of Van Dijk every time. And he puts his body in the way. He should have won a hell of a lot more free kicks than he did. Fucking Mariner, who will come on to later. Disgrace of a referee. I mean, five games, five defeats for Newcastle this season.
He was awful. He was absolutely awful yesterday. We're going to come on the third goal, which is this appalling. But
anyway, the goal. I'll big up Mankio. Great header. It's like literally a fucking brilliant header. The amount of time you'd see a player just kind of loop it up and the keeper would come and claim or even pull out a player. I think he means to get it to Rondon. And hilarious. Like, I don't know who the commentator was on Match of the Day, but he goes, oh, Liverpool might have a claim for offside that Jose Perez was impeding Alisson. It's like, no, mate, look at it. Alisson watches the header. Then he watches the ball go into Rondon's foot, and then he watches it like this. Look at my face. We're recording this for YouTube, by the way, so audio listeners can't see this. He goes, his eyes follow the ball with a clear line into the bottom corner of the net, and he doesn't move. Jose Perez is nowhere fucking near this goal. Pathetic from the commentator there, but you know, we'll not hold it against him.
Speaking of headers as well, mate.
But it's just hilarious.
That chance in the first half. Oh, you see there's another chance? Are we going on the clock yet? Because I just want to basically dig him out as well.
We'll finish the game. We'll talk about the managers after. Obviously, we'll talk about one more than the other. But you've got Rondon's turn, which I mean, fair play to Alisson, is a really good save actually, because that's a really well hit shot. And I think Alisson's almost, because he is a really good goalkeeper, he's almost like predicted before he takes the shot where he's going to put it. Because that was a brilliant bit of play. I mean, again, it was Lovren. Fucking hell, Lovren. Like, talk about Klopp, like, picking Lovren and had a matchup for this game. Nearly cost them the league. But anyway, we're back in. We're 2-2. The noise is sensational. And you know what goes against us, I think? And it's the same as Brighton at home. If you remember, we're battering Brighton for 20 minutes. There was only one winner. Glenn Murray goes down with a head injury. And the game stopped for 8 minutes. And it's almost like a reset. And Salah going off, not just because his replacement scored, It kind of killed us when we had all the momentum. We had everything going for us. That's the last thing that we needed.
That's absolutely, you say it kills the momentum, but also what it does is you've got players who've got this game plan to manage the movement of Salah and Marnier. And that changes all of a sudden. Origi's a completely different player. So the mindset of the players, if they've been so focused on you know, trying to keep Salah quiet, yes, we know that he scored, but if they've been so focused on it, to within split seconds, that whole kind of, you know, way of playing, that kind of game plan to just go and to have to think on your feet so quickly to adapt to a new player coming on, it will throw you. And then you're absolutely right. That's what it did. It took the momentum away from the team. It settled the crowd down a little bit. And it also just changed the kind of dynamic amongst the Newcastle players. And you're right, it was a very unfortunate. It's weird that we're saying that the fact that Salah went off actually put the game back in their favour slightly.
And I also feel, being hypercritical of Rafa, I think, as well as Mankio played, he was getting so much joy. I think Liverpool's two fullbacks get a lot of praise, and they're really good footballers, but in the second half, they were poor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Christian Atsu had Trent Alexander-Arnold's life in the second half. Robertson and Arnold were consistently letting players run in behind them. They didn't know where they were. There was a couple of offside decisions which were really close. The lads weren't playing offside. The Liverpool lads weren't playing offside. They just didn't know they were there. And it goes to 2-2, Norman, and I think it's before and after the Salah injury. Liverpool heads fall off. I mean, you see them booting the ball out of play. You see people trying to take free kicks, and all of a sudden, you know, there only seems to be one winner. And you call it with, you know, Klopp says in his post-match interview, he doesn't panic. There's no pressure. Well, there was fucking pressure on those players. And you saw that, and you saw like this kind of, they'd come into this game, and I understand that this isn't arrogance. It's they expect to beat Newcastle United because of where they are and where we are. I get it. It's not. And if you're a good footballer and you score lots of goals and you win lots of games, you have that confidence. Man City were the same when they come to St James's Park and they play Newcastle side, who've hardly like scored a goal in 2 months, and somehow we managed to do it. And you could see Man City's players can't react when we go 2-1 up, and it's almost like it goes to 2-2. How many chances, how many shots did Liverpool have? How many do you think? When it goes to 2-2, tell us how many shots on goal did Liverpool have at 2-2 before that?
I'd say the goal was the only one, right?
Zero. Zero shots from Salah and Rondon's goal. That's not a game plan. We have upset them to such a degree. Solomon Rondon has put the fear of life into them. Perez isn't really in the game very much, but when he is in the game, he's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And Christian fucking Atsu is having a field day, getting in behind. Although it's lack of quality, you know, there's that time in the second half, I think at 2-2, when he really should have put the ball across first time or had a shot, I think you said, at the game. Yeah. He should have just tested Alisson, probably got a corner out of it, and he fucks it up. It was a sensational performance. I'm going to come on to it after this, but we may as well talk about the winning goal, Norman. I just, where to start?
I tend to, you know, you're at the match and a decision goes against you and you have the kind of, you know, the visceral immediate reaction, the anger, especially when you've had a few drinks as well, your anger levels are through the roof. And I remember at the time being angry and then watching the game again on Match of the Day, this morning watching the highlights, I was actually angrier watching it sober the day after when I've got knee energy because I've got a mild hangover. I was angrier. The decision, I mean, frankly, mate, it was fucking outrageous that linesman gave that. I mean, this is, Fabinho threw himself on the floor. I mean, but it's not even like the lineman's got the excuse of being a little bit further up the line, slightly kind of impaired vision. He's gone with, you know, a bad gut instinct decision. It was in front of him. It was in front of him. There is no way that he should be given that decision. And for Mariner to not then just say, actually, mate, you're completely wrong. He's thrown himself on the floor. Sorry, I'm overruling you. To give him it was fucking shocking officiating, and really, really, because, mate, that was the only way they was going to score. They were going to score from either a corner from Shaqiri or a free kick from Shaqiri. You even saw Van Dijk on the free kick shifting Alexander-Arnold, saying, Shaq, put the in-swinger in. And that's exactly what happened. And it was just so bad. But what can you say? What else can you say other than fucking hell?
Yeah, and it's very disappointing. And there's been a bit of hyperbole and, you know, things on social media here at the moment. You know, Liverpool cheating and...
Oh, God, not at all.
You're trying to win Premier League titles here. Like, if anyone's saying that, if Almiron or Perez had gone down in the same fashion and we'd have scored, it's fine. You laugh about it. It's one of the things, fucking hell, we got away with that.
That's
one.
That's not Fabinho's fault, mate. That's neither Fabinho's nor Liverpool's fault. That's the official's fault.
It's the official's. And also, I'm going to put a slightly positive slant on it and say, I'm pleased he did that. That it is embarrassing for Fabinho. Don't blame him, but it's embarrassing. You know, he's a professional and he's had a hand in the midriff for Matt Ritchie and has done some sort of, like, if it was ballet, he'd be getting a stand. You know, that kind of mid-air twirl to kind of, like, turn over in the air. It's fucking brilliant. Like, and he's done that because he doesn't want to recycle possession. He doesn't want to... He could turn back. Matt Ritchie's going to let him pass the ball backwards all day long. He doesn't want to pass the ball back to Dejan Lovren. He doesn't want to pass the ball back to Virgil van Dijk because he knows they're going to have to start again. Mm-hmm. And Newcastle are in shape and they're not going to break with down. He knows that. That's why he's left with this ridiculous option to dive. It's such a ridiculous option that he's probably embarrassed about it now even. The referee, the linesman gives it. And that's who I'm annoyed with here, the linesman. Absolutely. It's, you know, and it's easy, isn't it? You know, we talked about in the match preview, which we put out for free last week, when the lads were saying, oh, you know, Lee Charlie's an idiot and they're idiots. It's like, well, they're not really all that, you know. And you can say this linesman, he's probably not a bad linesman. He's in the Premier League. He makes fucking 100 decisions a game. You get one wrong and people call you out. Normally, that's what I'd say. But this decision is so bad. It's so bad that you have to question his competence. Has he ever seen a game of football before? Has he ever played football? Does he understand football? And what I will say, what's even more frustrating, the foul is on the fucking touchline. When the free kick's given, Matt Ritchie goes and like you know, the linesman's life probably flashes through his eyes when Matt Ritchie storms in his face. And Matt Ritchie, the ball's put down. Matt Ritchie kicks the ball where it should be taken from, and Mariner goes and gets the ball and puts it back. And now it doesn't matter. I don't think it makes any difference to the goal being scored, but it's just that kind of like it. And it's, you know, I'm not questioning their impartiality. I'm really not. But it's just shite, lads. It's just fucking shite. This is a big game. Can you not see the occasion, the effort? Everyone's engrossed in this game of football, and it's been decided by that. Having said that, the defendant's fucking shite once again, Norman. Thoughts?
Absolutely shocking. But I'm gonna make excuses again. Yeah, like, look, it's a free kick that should never have been. The players are probably aware of that as well. It's thrown them to a certain extent. Again, the concentration levels are gonna sit because you probably stood there and it's like a bit of disbelief thinking, fucking free kick for that. And you're gonna be, regardless how professional you might be, you're gonna be angry about the fact that someone so pathetically bad has gone against you. So again, you know, these very, very fine margins, these split seconds decisions that are taken, like the, and also, so the players' concentration levels are gone, and also last second, they're expecting an outswinger from Alexander Arnold, and they quickly change it, and Shaqiri puts the inswinger in, and again that they haven't kind of lined up to necessarily counter that particular kind of free kick. It's still bad. I mean, I'm clutching at straws, mate. Because I'm just devastated.
Lascelles has got to be behind him. He can't be in front of him for that, and it's just shite. It happens, and you know what? Origi gets that bit of luck because he actually like heads it the other way, and it goes in off Lascelles' head. It's one of them things. When you're going for a title, these are the things you need to go in your favour. When you're battling for fucking 13th place, it doesn't really matter. Like, I'm still dead proud of the lads. And what I can't get over is, like, you know, those of you who listen to us and have done 5 years now, we're very grateful for that. Like, I think we're fairly positive. We've had some criticism in the past, you know, some of it, you know, fair enough, some of it not, about being too positive, about talking up the lads too much. Like, we've watched them, we're good at every single home and away game. And even I didn't think they were capable of that. You know, I don't know whether you listening or watching thought, like, that team, Isaac Hayden, Kason Young, Christian fucking Atsu, Javier Manquillo, Paul Dummett, Matt Ritchie playing out of position. Like, I didn't think, I thought the best we could do was a Man City performance. And we were better than that. And I thought, push comes to shove, it's a close game. From the balance of play, considering what was at stake and considering who had what to play for, I thought we were just a little bit better than them. Disagree with Jurgen Klopp. You know, were you surprised by the performance? Where does this rank for you in terms of home games you've seen in the Rafa Benitez?
We lost the match. We lost, but that was one of the most enjoyable matches I've been in the last two seasons. That was a Premier League performance, a really top Premier League performance, and that, as I think I mentioned to you before, we were talking off here before. I think that's the kind of performance that, if you give Rafa Benitez the backing, you give him the right tools, that's the kind of performance you'll get. Everything he does with what he's got. So that's why, for we've had for two seasons now, even in the Championship, pragmatic football, pragmatic functional football that is set out to achieve an aim. That aim for the last two seasons has been to avoid relegation. That's the tools he's had to work with. You give him the money, you give him the backing, that's the kind of performances you'll get. It was unbelievable. Look, the pressure was off the players yesterday. So I think, obviously, because there's no pressure on them to get anything out of this game, there wasn't any pressure on them to get anything, but they didn't need to get anything. But so you see players like Christian Atsu, Javier Manquillo, that lack of pressure on them can allow them to produce that kind of performance. They wouldn't be able to produce that performance week in, week out. If we were in a relegation battle, they wouldn't be able to unshackle themselves enough to do that. But as I say, you get four or five players in, we'll get more of those performances.
I agree completely. And I think Almiron plays yesterday, and I think Liverpool are in real trouble because we saw how much the struggle against Christian Atsu, and Almiron is 10 times the player Atsu, as everyone knows that. Like, fuck that. Again, those little bits of luck. We were missing our best defender in Florian Lejeune. Arguably, well, I'm going to say our best midfielder comfortably in Longstaff. And, you know, Rondon was magnificent. Perez is good. But, you know, one of our most important players, particularly to the way we're playing the counter-attack with Almiron. And then you look at Lovren getting skinned by Christian Atsu, and you just think, you lucky bastard. Because if you'd been playing
against Almiron, you'd be red-carded.
You wouldn't be on the pitch. And that, it's Almiron's still like this unknown quantity almost, where because he hasn't scored, like a lot of other Premier League fans or clubs don't really rate him. And we know he's fucking mint. I think he's dog's bollocks. I think he's going to tear the league up next season, provided we're backed and Rafa stays, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure, you know, like David O'Leary will see the same. There's just these little jokes that we'll have about who will take over if Rafa goes.
That's a hell of a show.
He's the worst one, yes. Right, Jurgen Klopp, after the game, you want to talk about him before we talk about Rafa?
You know, you caveat everything, I suppose. You say Klopp, right? Like, and, you know, you can make excuses for him. He comes out of the match and he says that we deserve to win that game. And it's like, mate, no, you didn't. And I can understand him saying it because he's trying to take the pressure off the players. He's trying to, you know, those players probably stepped off that pitch, realised they've been in a game, and there's probably a little bit of panic setting in because they're thinking, you know what, actually, we're not going to have this one, are we? Like, the last game of the season isn't going to be, it's not going to be as straightforward if you've got a team that plays anywhere near the level of these Newcastle players. And also, they clearly now consciously aware of their nerves because that's what it looked like to me yesterday. So Klopp's probably trying to take a little bit of heat off them because that wasn't a necessarily impressive performance by them. We had more shots at goal. We had more shots on target. We had a lot less possession, but that's just, you know, what does it Rafa say about possession?
It's a made-up statistic for television.
There it is. We, as far as I'm concerned, we use the space better on the pitch. We're just a better side. And for Klopp, like, it's almost like, why did you say that? It almost felt spiteful. And for somebody who's saying, I don't feel the pressure, that to me was the comment of a man who feels under pressure.
He feels the fucking pressure. And it's fair enough, like, I'd feel the pressure. You know, that's no, we're not criticising him. Listen, ultimately, it doesn't matter what Jurgen Klopp says about Newcastle United. It's irrelevant to us, but you are spot on, and I think you make, that's a great point, because I think the fact that he feels the need to come and say that, they probably realise they've got away with it a bit. And like you say, you know, we got beat. It's not great. I'd fucking love to have drawn that game or got a win, but ultimately, there are bigger things. It's almost like the occasion and what we did outweighs the context of any result, because if we get a draw there, yeah, fucks Liverpool and all Liverpool, you know, I don't care, you don't care, Liverpool fans care, Man City fans care, you're weirdos who like obsess about fucking other Premier League teams care. I don't care about Liverpool, I care about Newcastle United, and Newcastle United are at a crossroads. Look at the flag pre-game. I mean, wow,
unreal effort, like, that, yeah, I mean, wow,
you know, it's just the pictures are almost like photoshopped, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Is that good? It's almost like, imagine if we could do this as a fan base, and we didn't, you know. Huge credit goes to War Flags and everyone who put the effort and time into A, raising the money, B, getting it from fucking Poland, driving over there, and C, then, you know, putting it up and down without a hitch last night. Absolutely everyone at True Faith takes their hats off to you. I'm sure the rest of the fan base is the same. But you've got the flag, you've got that atmosphere, you've got the stadium, you've got that team and that manager doing. We're at a crossroads. The easy thing to do is just to push on. No Newcastle fan is asking the club to spend beyond its means. No one's saying, Mike Ashley, put your hand in your pocket, because we know that's going to happen. Not going to happen, sorry. It's like, look at what we could be. Let Rafa Benitez have as much money as possible. Let's sign some good players. Let's sign them early. Let's get him on a 5-year deal. And let's go and have a crack at the top 10 next season. And then who knows what happens beyond that. I think that's it for today. Key thing, one last thing to say, one last plug. We have a live event in London night before the Fulham game next Saturday. Norman Riley will be there. I won't be. Everyone else in True Faith, I think, will be there just about. We have George Colkin of The Times and Luke Edwards of The Telegraph, special guests. Fantastic live podcast show. Get yourselves along. There is like 5 tickets left. So I'll put a link in the description of this podcast, both on YouTube and on SoundCloud and iTunes and the rest of it. So if you do fancy it, like, please do get in, like, ASAP. Buy a ticket. It's £10. We're supporting Crisis Homeless Charity on the night. But tickets are going to go this week, so I don't want to see anyone disappointed. That's next Saturday night before Newcastle take on Fulham next week. We've got absolutely loads coming up on Patreon this week. Please do consider, you know, if you like what me and Norman do, if you like what you hear, there's absolutely loads more of it, so get involved. It's only about £7 a month, and it's at least 20 extra shows. We have so much coming up over the summer, we don't know where to start. And I think, Norman, thank you very much for your time. We'll leave it there. You have a train to catch. You have a train to catch to get back to London. And thanks for watching and listening to True Faith Podcast. We'll be back with the next free show Sunday or Monday. I don't know when it's going to happen. Hopefully after a sensational win over Fulham and Rafa Benitez signing a new contract. Thanks very much for listening.